Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio. Brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com. Now, here's your host.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be an interesting one. But before we get into things, I'd like to thank our sponsor, OnPay. Without them, we could not be sharing these stories. So please support OnPay. Today on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Dr. Darren Noggles, and he is with MAJL Diagnostic Laboratories. Welcome, Dr. Noggles.
Welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Well, before we get too far into things, tell us about MAJL Diagnostic Laboratories. How are you serving folks?
So MAJL is a high complexity diagnostic laboratory. We are based out of Atlanta. And during this pandemic, we kind of focused more of our testing on COVID-19 testing. And we've been testing since the 1st of May, and we've been testing for about close to 8 weeks, and we've tested over 15,000 clients within this 8 week span.
Now, there's a lot of talk about the importance of testing, but why do you think it's so difficult to get so many people tested? And what are you guys doing to help? It sounds like you're doing quite a bit, but like, what can be done more to get more people tested?
So if you can remember in the beginning around February, March, when this pandemic first hit the U.S., we were only testing people who were really sick. The hospitals were only testing people that were really sick, and we didn't even have any testing sites in these the Department of Health testing centers. And I think in the beginning, we had it all wrong. I mean, we had it all wrong, only testing the critically ill patient, only testing the really, really sick patients. We're only really testing a small sample of the population of America. And again, these were not the people who were spreading the disease. If you look at it, 50% of the people that are infected are asymptomatic. And when I say asymptomatic, I mean that they have no symptoms. And the newly cases, they say about 40% of the newly infected people, the transmission is done by people who don't even know that they're sick. So we had it all wrong in the beginning, only testing the sick. And we finally woke up and around in the second week of May and started saying, hey, everybody needs to be testing. And in order for us to get ahead of this pandemic, there has to be a mass testing on an enormous scale. I mean, I'm talking about testing millions of people a week. And we're only testing in the U.S., we're barely getting to 100,000 a week. So we have to really ramp up this testing because if we don't, we're going to see these surges. We're going to see the healthcare systems being overwhelmed with mass people being infected and a lot of sick people out there.
Now, can you explain the actual testing? Because I heard there's two different kinds of tests. Like there's one that if you have it, and then the other ones, do you have the antibodies? Like, can you explain those and what the tests are and what the difference between them are?
Yes. So MAJL is probably one of the only, if not the few, that only do two tests. And those two tests are different tests, and they give us different data. They give us different results. So the first test that we test at most of the public health departments test is the nasal swab, the PCR test. That's the first test that we test. The nasal swab basically tests you for the viral infection. It tests you for patients who are currently infected, patients who are contagious, patients who can go out and they can spread the disease. So it's important to find, it's important for this test because this test would give us information on who's infected and then getting them to isolate themselves so that the virus can take its course for 14 days and then the virus dies within that patient system. So that's the first test. The second test is the serological test. serological test is a test where we actually test the blood for antibodies. That's also important because once somebody's infected, your body develops antibodies within about 14 to 21 days after the infection. Once you have the antibodies, one, you have immunity. Two, the less likelihood that you are going to get reinfected. And probably the most important is that people who have antibodies, they usually can donate their plasma to patients who are really sick because your plasma has antibodies. So the first test is the nasal swab, where we actually put the Q-tip in the nose, the nostril, and we collect the sample. The second test is the blood test, where we actually send for the antibodies. Two different tests. They give you two different results and two different data that we can use and collect in the future.
Now, do we have any kind of enough? Do we have enough data to know, okay, X number of people or whatever percent of the population is going to get this or has it? This many have the antibody. So, how much knowledge do we even have at this point?
We can only go by the numbers, and this is why it's so important for mass testing. We're not going to have a good set of numbers unless we get a large population of the U.S. has been tested. If you look at it, I think last week, maybe a couple of days ago, we were about 12 million people in the U.S. have been tested. So 12 million people, and we're like, what, 350 million people? That's less than 10% of the population that's been infected. And of that 12 million that we tested, I think the population where it's 1 million, around 1 million that has been that's been infected. So that's a really low number to really look at the U.S. and say, hey, does the U.S., how many numbers are we testing? And two, important with the antibodies is that in order for us, before we can actually have immunity, there's two forms of immunity that we can get, either through vaccine, which that's a year from now, or our body develops a natural immunity to where we actually been infected and we produce the antibodies. And a good predictor of us moving forward in really reopening up the country is knowing how many people in the U.S. has had immunity, and they call this herd immunity. So if you're saying 10% of the people have only been tested, and 1 million of those have only tested positive, then that's a small portion of America that has immunity. So we still have a long ways to go in order for us to say, okay, we in America, we as this country have a substantial amount of people that have tested positive that have immunity. So we can probably move forward in reopening businesses in a healthy way and in a phase-like manner.
Now, so it sounds like we don't have enough data yet to know kind of what to do next, really, and we're just kind of making best guesses based on a limited amount of information.
You're right.
And so when you're doing things like that, that's where people may make wrong assumptions because they don't have enough data to know what's what. Now, Is this disease affecting people? Like, I know that it was affecting like the elderly at a much greater case. Are there other groups of people that are affecting maybe in a not the norm way that they're being affected more?
Probably, and I think the word that we always look for is there a group of people that are affected disproportionately to another group of people? Yeah. In the beginning, we only saw that we only thought that elderly people over 65 were being infected. But then we started looking at more and more data. Really, we started looking at the areas in the country where there was what we call the epicenter, where there was a large surge of new cases, people getting sick. And we look at cities like New Orleans. We look at cities like New York. 70% of the mortality rate in New Orleans were African Americans. African Americans only represent 30% of the city of New Orleans. So 70%. So we look at, okay, we looked at these people and like, what do these people have in common? One, that they have multiple medical problems such as diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, stroke, lung problems. And if you look at the way we as African Americans are graded in to prove the risk of these diseases, African Americans are at the top of the list of the increased risk of diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease. So you see that in these portion of people, they're going to be infected more. They're going to have the most mortality rate. So yeah, it is disproportional of affecting African Americans more than any other race. And I think the second race is Latinos and then Native Americans and then Caucasians or white people are really down on the bottom list. And this just tells you exactly where these ethnic groups lie as far as risk of these certain diseases, and we're always at the top.
And then this isn't to say that it sounds like it's an equal opportunity virus in the sense that anybody right. can get it, but the people who right. get it the worst are people who have health issues, and a lot of right. times those people are minorities.
Right.
So now, in your lab, since you've been doing this, what have you learned?
What have we learned? So we tested over 15. So every test site, we do about maybe 300 to 400 tests per day. And at our sites, what I've learned is that we do the antibody test and we actually can get the results immediately. And in every group, if we were to take that 400 patients that we saw that day, and that patient represent the population. And in our population, it's just not African Americans. It's African Americans, Latinos, and whites. So it's an equal distribution of patients that kind of can represent the U.S. population. And out of that 400 people who we test, usually we get about 10% of the people, between 8 to 10% of the people have test positive for the antibodies, meaning that 8 to 10% of the people have immunity to the disease. So if you look at that and you say, okay, let's let that represent the U.S. population, we can extrapolate from that saying, hey, only about 8 to 10% of the U.S. population has immunity, which that's really low. In order for us to really look at the health of the U.S. when responding to this pandemic, we have to at least get about 30 to 35% of the U.S. population to have immunity to test positive for the antibodies. And then that way we can open up certain businesses in a safe manner.
But the only way to get this antibodies is to be impacted by the virus.
Right.
So it's kind of a catch-22, right?
Which is a good and bad thing. But again, until we get the vaccine, the only way that people are going to get through this disease is to have immunity. And the only way that we're not going to be. So if I don't have the vaccine, if I have the antibody and I have immunity to it, I can go to work without. One, knowing that I'm not going to get reinfected, and two, meaning that if I do get reinfected, I likely will not suffer the severity of the disease. I tested four different times, and I'm negative every four times. And every time I test negative, I'm like, you know, like kind of kicking myself, like I want the immunity. We want the immunity, but again, we have to be exposed to it.
Now, how does this compare to like kind of quote unquote normal flus? Like the flu prior to this, the flu would come every year and right. a lot of people would die and a lot of people would get the flu and there was a flu shot and that would help. But is this just mean like the new normal is like, say, hypothetically, on average, say 60,000 people died of the normal flu. And then now right. you have this new strain of a flu. And then now instead of 60,000 people dying every year, it's, you know, 260,000 people die every
right.
year.
Right.
Is that kind of an accurate way to look at that? Or is this a different kind of thing?
I think it's a different kind of thing. One is because this COVID-19 virus is a novel virus, meaning that this is a new virus, meaning nobody has immunity to it. Nobody in the world has ever been infected by it. So nobody has immunity. Nobody has antibodies. People with the flu virus, I know some years that the flu virus can change, but most of the time it kind of stays its natural structure or natural course to where when we are infected, we have immunity, we have antibodies, and we can fight it off. And that can you can look at that as you look at the mortality, the difference between the mortality of the flu and the mortality of the COVID virus, you have what, a 3 to 5% mortality rate in the COVID-19 versus the flu, you have a 0.1% mortality. So this is a different disease where it's killing more people. It may not be infecting more people than the flu, because the flu, if we've, you know, the numbers for the flu are staggering, but people do survive easier than being infected by the COVID-19. So I think with the difference between those is, one, the COVID-19, it's a new virus. Nobody's ever had immunity. Nobody's never been infected. And two, the mortality rate of the COVID-19 is much more greater.
Right. But as we move forward, is this just another thing that people are going to die of, and that we have to take as many precautions as possible? But this is just part of kind of life. You know, people are dying of cancer, and they're dying of heart disease, and they're dying of lots of things at greater rates than this. This might be new, but does it warrant this much kind of, I don't want to use this word lightly, but like hysteria, in the sense that we have to, you know, be locked down and can't go out and do all these things. Is that really the response necessary in order to get through this?
I think so, because if you look at, you say everybody dies of cancer, everybody dies. But if you look at over a short week of like, what, 12 weeks, you've had over how many deaths in? I'm trying to look at the numbers of the deaths. In a short period of time, you had a large mass casualty. And that's the thing that we're really scared of, is that over a short period of time, you had a large amount of people die from an illness. Unlike the flu, it spread out over a year. This is a 3-month period. We've lost so many lives from it. And I think that's the difference. I'm trying to see the numbers of 2003, I'm trying to look at the cases in America, how many people have no, the case in Georgia is 2,329 deaths.
So now,
yeah, I think in a short period of time, we've lost so many people.
Right. And that's very scary and terrible. I don't want to diminish that, but in the scope of humans and behavior and virus and disease, this just becomes added to a list at some point, right? At some point, we're going to kind of acclimate to this and make whatever kind of changes necessary to get it under as control as best that we can. But this isn't a new type of thing. I mean, there's been plagues and pandemics through human history.
Right. You're absolutely right.
So now, how are you? Are you optimistic? Like, what's your feeling about? Obviously, we want more. To me, this is a breakdown in terms of the testing, I think, was a critical mistake to not be able to test in this country at the numbers necessary, and to be able to track the people who have it and to kind of lock them down. That was a tremendous misstep, in my opinion. Now, going forward, are you optimistic, or like, do you think that we're going to get the testing up? Do you think we're going to be able to get this under control, you know, in a reasonable amount of time?
I would hope so. And I think that we are taking steps as far as testing. I think under the CARES Act, where the Trump initiated a certain sector in the CARES Act where people can be tested for free. You know, in the beginning, people had to go out and pay to get tested. But I think them taking steps to offering the test to everybody for free is a first step. But I think another thing is we have to create a platform where we are promoting people to get tested. And that's what we've done as far as in our testing sites. We go to churches and the pastors promote of getting tested. And they are more likely, people are more likely to show up at their churches to get tested because they're in familiar settings. They know the pastor versus at these public health sites.
Right. So you're bringing the test to them. You're bringing the test. You're bringing the test to the people where they are.
Yes. Right.
And then that allows you to get more people tested.
Yeah. And the thing is that there are trusted community leaders that people follow. versus going to a health site, a public state-run health site where we're saying go. And again, in the African-American community, there's such a distrust in the government as far as, you know, the health care. And if you look back in 100 years ago where they did the Tuskegee experiment, we still have that in the back of our mind. So African-Americans are more likely to go to their church and get tested than go to a public facility or government ran facility.
So now what is the how do you see MAJL Diagnostic Laboratories kind of working through this and continuing on beyond this? Like what is what do you want people to know about your work?
So MAJL, what we're focused on is kind of a community outreach where we are serving all underserved communities, going directly through channels such as the church, municipalities like the College Park. We have connections with the mayor of College Park of Georgia, mayor of East Point. So we develop a relationship with them. They trust us. We trust them. We trust them to get the word out to their people. And then we show up and there's numbers. Like we tested at one site one day within 4 hours. We tested 1,600. We ran 1,600 tests in 4 hours.
And that's the nasal swab? Because that's pretty fast, right? Like you can really do that pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's pretty quick. We do two tests. We do the serological test and the nasal swab at our sites.
So when you're going out there, the person's being tested for both each time. Now, how often do you have to get tested? Because it would seem like I get tested today and then I can go to, you know, the store and then come back and now I have it.
This is why this thing is going to be around for a long time. And in my motto, and I came up with the motto, my motto is we should be testing millions. We should have tested early. We should continue to test late. And we should continue to test over and over and over until this pandemic is over. So people are going to be tested. People should be tested more than one time. If you test positive for the antibodies, then you probably don't need to ever be tested again because you have the antibodies. So until you develop the antibodies, you should be tested numerous times. Even when you become sick, you should be tested again and again. So again, we are just scratching the surface on this testing sites, and we should dig deeper. And understand that this is something that's not a one-time deal thing, and then that people need to be tested over and over. And again, I'm tested 4 times, and I work in the emergency department. I'm an emergency medicine physician, and one of our units is designated to taking care of COVID-19 sick patients. And twice a week, I'm in that unit for 10 hours a day, suited up in my PPE uniform. And, you know, and some of the nurses, you know, again, with the healthcare workers, some of them aren't even wearing proper PPE. So we got to address that, too.
Now, this is something that, like you said, we're going to be dealing with this for a while now. But the way out, it sounds like you're saying, is that once we get this herd immunity to a certain level, it'll be more manageable. And once we get a vaccine, right, it'll be that much more manageable. Right. Yeah. That's how it ends. Right.
Hopefully the vaccine comes soon. But we also got to be cautious about how soon that vaccine comes, because vaccines have to be tested. There has to have research. And if you're just going to throw something out there without having the proper research, without having the proper clinical trials, in the end, it can backfire. So even though we want a vaccine out quickly, we also want the government or these research companies to do their due diligence to make sure that this vaccine is safe.
Well, doctor, thank you so much for all the work you're doing. It's important work,
thank
and
you.
You're impacting a lot of people and families. Thank you for all that you do.
Thank
if
you.
Somebody wanted to learn more and maybe get on that into one of those test sites when they're available, what is the website?
The website is www.covidtestkit.com.
Now.com. And then you can go there and you can find out where the testing is being held, or
yes,
that's
you can find out all the areas that we will be testing. We usually have our schedule booked a week in advance, so we know exactly where we're going to be 7 days out.
Yep, and it's important. This is something people should go and make the time to be tested. This is the just from the community needs it, but you also need that kind of peace of mind to know where you're at. And if you're asymptomatic, right, you don't want to be spreading this.
Right.
Good stuff, Doctor. Right. Thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio. And remember, we could not be doing this work without the support of our sponsor, OnPay. Please support them so we can continue to share these important stories.
Today's episode of Atlanta Business Radio is brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com.